Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Today on Quickslants the Podcast, Anthem Fallout continues.
Also, we'll talk about the Texans game and the Carolina Panthers. All that and more coming up on Quickslants the Podcast. Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Tom Curran. That's Gerard Mayo over there.
Yeah.
And, of course, this is the Senator Phil Perry.
Hello.
I tried to swear up because with the new show, 9 to 12 at night, doing that at the beginning, kind of taxes the trachea and the voice box
sure.
a little bit more than I need it to be
sure.
taxed.
Of course it does.
That and the pack of cigarettes you smoke every day.
You know what I do? I drink too much coffee before these things, which is dehydrating. It's a
diuretic. It burns the larynx.
That'll dry out.
Larynx? Larynx.
Larynx.
Modal?
Thoracic.
All right. So, first things first. Instead of going into a whole bunch of sociological stuff, which we can get into if it happens organically. But the first thing I want to ask is, because we have a former Patriots captain here, did that look a little disorganized to you, the protest slash demonstration slash deployment on the sidelines?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And usually we're so used to seeing the Patriots on the same page, and I felt like that was just all over the place.
Why would it end up looking that way? Because Bill is very particular from stretching to the way the team gets on the field.
You know, honestly, this is a new situation. When you really, you know, this isn't your typical, you know, the benches aren't heated. You know, my gloves don't fit. My cleats suck. This isn't that, you know, Bill, you know, this isn't the typical issue that Bill and Bears and those guys are used to dealing with, right? This is something that I think everyone is learning on the fly, right? And everyone's trying to do their own little shebang. Look at the Steelers, right? They're like, all right, we're all going to stay in. Then one guy goes out. You look at the Jacksonville Jaguars owner. He comes out. He's out there with his players. Then you look at Jerry Jones.
But they do it before the anthem.
They do it before the anthem. So it's like everyone's trying to figure it out. And honestly, it's, you know, and I don't want to, you know, because the awareness is there. Hands down, the awareness is there. But there, I mean, these for the owners. I'm just from the owner's perspective alone, right? There's a lot of money at stake on these decisions that you're making, like how we're going to approach this.
Mm-hmm.
Will I put a statement out? Will I, you know, have the team do this X, Y, and Z? So
what will it look like if I say I don't want anyone kneeling prior to?
Right. Exactly.
That? How will that impact my,
cause even if they're not racist or anything, even if they fully support the cause,
I look at Pittsburgh as, you know, a Rust Belt rock ribbed kind of city. And I could see why the Rooney family, which has been embedded in that city and owners of that team since the 30s, would say, you know what, Mike, I know that there's a lot of strong individuals who are experiencing things that we as billionaire white men have never experienced, even though we have worked hand in hand with minorities for decades. But could
with
you do
a millionaire black men? You could say it.
No. Well, they ain't all
this guy. <right? laughs> it's still not. No, seriously.
But I mean,
because the black men, you know, they're millionaires. There's a whole.
They
another,
are.
Yeah,
they are.
When you start to look at this whole socioeconomic, like, you know, from top to bottom. I mean, we're not treated the same as the guy walking down the street.
No. And that's the interesting thing, too. But then you'll have – you're not, but then it's probably even more arresting for, no pun intended, if you do go, if you say move to a predominantly white neighborhood, perhaps in Massachusetts, since this is a fairly segregated state, I think regardless of what your feelings on the racial issues here are, it's a fairly segregated state. You move into a town and you're suddenly the only black guy on the street, and people are just going out to get the paper, and they go, "That's a black guy? Is that a black guy over there?" It's not racist. It doesn't see that all the time.
Call the... So
honey!
We got one! This is crazy.
But, you know, that all enters into it. So I think you have... The way we get into this is you have to look at your demographics of your fan base.
But this is
while
a, this
still
is a
not
national,
pissing off the president.
This is a national thing, like a national debate. I guess, you know. But my thing is this, and we kind of hit on it a little bit on the show, right? The awareness is there. And Phil's here. He's just not speaking. I don't know.
I'm listening.
He has a future in politics.
I think it's
important that everybody
listens to each other here, right?
No, for sure.
All right.
Oh, you know
so
what?
Let's do that.
Point taken.
There we go.
Point taken.
What do you got? You were starting to make a point.
No, now I'm with the awkward silence. You go. Okay. No, seriously. My thing is the awareness is there. It's like, what's next? Like, how do we, you know, because you see, how many times have we seen, like, you know, you bring awareness to a particular thing, and then all of a sudden it just fades away. It just fades away, right? I feel like this one's not going to fade away until people figure it out, which is a hard thing. I mean, it's super – that's an all-encompassing – just figure it out. It's not that easy.
Right.
So I want your perspective on how it worked for the Patriots, or how it might have worked for the Patriots. Is this something that Belichick would bring up to the team beforehand to talk about?
Definitely.
Or do you think they didn't, because like we're saying, it did look a little bit disorganized.
This is something where Bill's like, all right, captain's meeting, boom, go talk to the team, respective groups. Because the thing, Bill, the locker room, you know, a lot of people like to think like Bill's this micromanager and, you know, he's everywhere. The locker room was like, Bill would walk through the locker room to go to the weight room, right? So it wasn't like he was, hey, what are you guys talking about? What are you guys doing? What are you guys? He let the locker room kind of police itself. And I totally respect that, right? In saying that, I'm sure 99.95%, but I'm not there, so I'll give that 0.5 or 0.05, whatever.
Yep.
I'll leave that out there.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that the captains talked about this probably multiple times, probably an emergency captain's meeting. We're having, every once in a while, you know, it'd be like, captain, stay back. And it's like, oh, shoot, what happened? The benches aren't heated this week. It's like, what? We need another bus. There aren't enough. I don't have a double seat. Now I'm mad. I have to sit with
another
guy.
Can we get some more warmers, please?
Exactly. Yeah. No, but in all seriousness, I'm sure he talked about it. But then you always will have these splinter groups, and that's why it's good to have, you know, like five captains that can kind of try to wrangle people. But somewhere amongst those splinter groups, you know, because the offensive line, like usually the offensive linemen, they just stick together. Like, oh, we're over here. Mm-hmm. Oh. We eat a lot. Cool. We like to hunt. It was like, perfect.
Exactly.
Then you have, like, you know, the linebackers. Like, oh, we're tough. We're fast. You know, just you have these groups, though, right? The quarterbacks, oh, we're so smart. It's only three of us. We can do what we want. It's only three. It's not hard, right? But, no, seriously, you have all of these guys who are, you know, you have these splinter groups. But inside, it's like team of teams. General McChrystal's whole team of teams methodology, right? So somewhere in there, guys were like, hey, we're taking a knee. And the other guys were like, hey, this is what we're going to do. In the offensive line room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all those guys stood, right? And so it was just all over the place. The majority of people who took a knee were defensive.
You had DBs. You had there were some
linebackers,
special teams guys like Brandon Bolden, Johnson Batamosi,
Brandon King,
defensive linemen.
How many offensive guys took a knee? I'm just curious.
Bolden?
No.
Brandon Cooks? A couple.
Cooks. Okay.
A couple.
Why is that? Let me ask you that. Why is that?
I don't know. I wonder if they're taking their
cues
from Brady.
Defensive to offensive?
Yeah. If you were to break down these groups, let's
taking
start breaking down
Brady
these groups.
Maybe Brady stood.
We're breaking down groups.
There's
like
a lot
black
more black people on defense than there are on offense. I know that we talk about the skill positions, but there was for years the Patriots did not have a black offensive lineman, which
Why
I always
that?
Thought was unusual. You would have to ask Bill and Nick But I've always found that – I always found that striking when you watched, you know, the Matt White, Purdue, Logan Mankins, Fresno, Dan Copen, Boston College.
And you Brian right – you had Brian Waters.
Had you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I kind of like – I mean, I don't want to sound like that guy, but I kind of like just hovered around to all the groups.
No, but
hey, what are you guys doing tonight?
Yeah.
You mixed it up with everybody. You're a man of the
but
people.
But you asked why they were more defensive than offensive. I think that there's predominantly, at least on the Patriots.
No, I think that's a valid statement.
Yeah. So I don't know why. I mean, like I've said, and Curtis Marsh.
Cassius Marsh.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
He is a white. Is he a Caucasian?
Curtis Martin.
He's Caucasian. Yep. He stood arm in arm with some of those guys that stood. David Harris, Dwayne Allen, Philip Dorsett, Brady were part of that group.
That would be my group, though.
You'd be the like, stand and link arms.
I would be arm in arm.
Yep.
Because when you look at a locker room, you know, especially when you have 60 guys, right, and you have coaches, and the coaches are the ones who are kind of being left out of the whole circle,
because
you have black coaches, white coaches, and I'm sure, you know, they all, you know, they're not all on one side, like, hey, this is what I believe, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But you look at these locker rooms across the NFL, and these are like microcosms of the United States. Like, you have the full shebang as far as population is concerned.
One thing I haven't really heard anybody address, so I'll ask you, is the subtle act of coercion that goes on if you turn around as a player who says, look, I don't want to kneel. That's not what I think I believe in. But you see 10 to 12 teammates kneeling. There's going to be a level of perhaps – yeah, you guys, you're putting me in a bad spot here.
Yeah.
Maybe a minor level of resentment or also being made to feel a part of. Or you guys are going to be pissed off if I don't kneel?
Right.
Or am I pissed off at you because I don't think you're going about it the right way? And by the right way, it could either be because you disagree with their social message or because you think that that's not the time or place or you don't think that their motivations are necessarily pure. I think that's the – we've not talked about – how that player who feels unfairly put on the spot by the demonstration might feel. Would you be aware of that guy? Like, I'd feel somewhat guilty isn't the right word, but I would be overly conscious of my decision if I decided to stand and I was very close friends with Devin McCourty.
Well, I wonder if that was part of the discussion going into it, too, beforehand. If somebody like Devin says, hey, guys, we're all doing our thing here. If you want to stand, that's great. We're going to take a knee. There's going to be a few of us that take a knee. There's going to be a few of us that link arm in arm. Everybody should do their own thing and not feel bad about it. Would that be part of the discussion
But my thing is, like, you keep hearing the word, like, divisive and, like, you know, it's tearing us apart and things like that. But, you know, long term, this will probably be a good thing, honestly. This would be
a
good thing because we're still talking about it. And, you know, it would be difficult. I mean – you look at, you know, any large group, you have 10%, and I'll probably say you just have 10% of the guys who are like true leaders, right? They're going to do what they feel is right. And I feel like a lot of people, they really don't know the facts. They don't even know why they're taking a knee. Like they don't know why, you know, they don't know why they're standing.
They can't provide statistics to back up and say, here's the social oppression that's going on.
Exactly.
Here.
Or you can't have a conversation and, you know, and everyone's going to say, well, this is what happened. This is what has happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's using their own. This is how I grew up. This is how I see America. So you have all of these different, you know, backgrounds. That's what makes this problem so interesting and so complex.
What was your reaction being in stadium and hearing the boos? Because that was just, to me, it was uncomfortable on a couple levels. One, I felt badly for the players who were demonstrating because I believe you should stand for the anthem. But I also believe that, unfortunately, as repulsive it is, up to and including burning the flag, you are constitutionally allowed to do that. Supreme Court has ruled on that. So that being the case, as repulsive as all that might be, or as much as I'd rather see folks standing up and linking arms than kneeling, I think that was a dignified way to do it. So when I heard people booing people who are kneeling in silent reflection, I found that like booing someone in church.
You never boo someone in church.
I haven't done it in years. And also, I think that, you know, to anybody who's going to turn around and say, hey, take your hat off. Or, you know, don't you hold the door for somebody. I mean, just mow your own lawn.
Right.
You worry about you. So what was your reaction to someone in the stands?
It was surprising to me, right? I didn't expect that, you know, because I feel like guys were already kneeling before. And it's like it's at an all-time high right now, right? So everyone's like, you know. Now, was this the most? I don't even know.
Oh, yeah.
This is the most as far as people kneeling.
This week. I think you had over 300 players across the league that.
Yeah, and I'm sure every one of them had their names printed on a piece of, which is crazy to me as well. Like who kneel? Like mm-hmm. I turn to see the scores. Like who's kneeling?
See, that's when it starts to get ridiculous. Is you know we're not talking about
it's like we're aware. We all are aware. My 6 year old son is aware that. Something needs to change. You know, and I'm sure there are so many kids out here like, why are these people kneeling? And so what are we doing for the next generation? It's like we need the next best steps.
Could this be, and this is the last, we're 2 minutes away from the end of this, folks.
Oh, my goodness. And we've only talked, this is what I'm talking about.
No, 1650.
He's, I think, talking about this specific conversation.
Oh, okay.
We're going to do some football stuff, too.
But could this be the goal anyway? That you have three idiots who all say to themselves, I don't want to talk about the anthem. I don't want to talk about this stuff. And then we go into a room, we put the headphones on, and 20 minutes passes pretty quickly.
Oh, definitely.
Because we start talking about this could be the end result. Everything doesn't have to have perfect hiring practices that measure up statistically by the time we leave this room in the podcast or by 2019, there's no edicts that can be satisfied.
Yeah.
How
do you measure success, right? And the way you're even talking about it, and I wish the listeners could see you, I see smoke coming out of your ears because you're like walking on eggshells, making sure you say the exact right words, which is a terrible place to be. It's a terrible place to be. It's like when you used to date a girl or something that, you know, you probably wronged or something. And it's like now you're walking on eggshells. Have you ever been in that position?
No,
like,
don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. All right. Whoever, you've wronged someone and now you're walking on eggshells. It's a bad place to be. So now everyone's like – they, you know.
But I think people are getting more comfortable with the idea of having a conversation about this sort of thing, which maybe is the goal, right?
You know, if you
to be in that place now after all of this, I think is a good thing.
What pisses off the general white guy so much about these protests? A, that the general white guy perhaps believes that the general black guy thinks that, boy, whatever privileges you think I'm enjoying, I just don't feel them every day when I wake up. And that's what folks will say is, well, that's what white privilege is. You don't understand. And then you'll have to go, you know, I'm not feeling it.
I would argue, and I'll probably catch some backlash for this. I would argue, you could even put the middle class, lower middle class white man, you know, blue collar white man, in the minority bucket.
No doubt.
I feel, you know, even though it's not on this issue, but I'm just saying as far as population is concerned.
And that's what a number of best-selling books proved last year prior to the election, whether it be Hillbilly Elegy or...
Shameless plugs. Stop it.
No. Stop talking about my plugs. Sorry. Okay, it's a third time today. Any more on this?
No, I think we covered a lot of it. Matt Light had a lot to say this week.
He did.
Had a lot to say.
And I'm like, why even get into the game if you don't have to?
So here's the thing that he said that was that kind of made a lot of people scratch their heads before we completely move on. He basically... tried to explain how when you are on the Patriots, you kind of not give up your rights in some ways, but you give over a part of yourself in terms of voicing your opinion on certain issues that helps make the team what the team is. Did you feel like that while you were here in New England? Like you had to obviously keep your mouth shut when it comes to injuries and game plans and stuff like that. Right. But he made it seem like it went beyond that, too. Did you feel the same way?
There were certain things, you know. But once again, this is an issue that even Matt Light hasn't had to deal
with.
Right,
it wasn't really
a
thing
for him.
He was
I read something where he said something like, and I like Matt. I like Matt. So I'll just preface it with that. I like Matt Light.
Mm-hmm.
So don't chop this out. But my whole thing, my whole thing, you know, he said, if I was on the team, this wouldn't have happened. And to me, that's ludicrous because, you know, once again, you're in your offensive lineman, like, bubble over here, you know, and you hit on it earlier, probably 70% white, and you come on the defensive – you think you're going to come on the defensive side of the ball and tell guys like Vince Wilfork and Ty Warren, like, guys, you better not take a knee. It's not happening. Not happening.
And that to me is –
I
just found it kind of more disrespectful than I thought. But I think what also happened, I talked about this last night on the show, it's a conversation that taps into such emotions that when we start talking about it and we are having our first bite at the apple, which maybe Matt was having at that point, his first time to talk on the radio about it, I'm guessing, and I can't say for sure, that he might have gotten rolling downhill a little quicker than he thought.
Yeah.
I'm ashamed to be a Patriot. That seems outrageous. Additionally, I mean, to say that it wouldn't happen if I was a captain. Now, how would you affect the way that it wouldn't happen? Are you going to walk around and pick each guy up by the scruff of his neck? Good luck with that.
Or have a personal conversation with each individual that wants to do it and convince them not to? I mean, it's just
because the actual – and that's the thing is that's why this happened. A similar mindset to what Matt voiced by the President of the United States, who said, you know, I won't brook any opposition to the idea that it's offensive. You shouldn't do that or you should lose your job, you sons of bitches. Well, that's just begging for someone
to react. Exactly. It's like,
well, you didn't have,
why?
What were the numbers of people that were demonstrating, protesting before Trump's comments? I mean,
I was sick of it.
It's a complete reaction to his challenge.
But I feel like he just stoked the fire. It's just like
purposely.
For you even saying sons of bees, it's like when you break down that word, I'm like, ooh. But when growing up hearing that word, it was like, oh, whatever. Yeah. But now when I heard the president say, I'm like, oh, now you're talking about my mom.
Terrible.
Don't talk about my mom. Don't talk about my mama.
That is over the line.
You cross the line, you talk about my mom. Don't do it. Now, I'm taking a knee right now. If you guys have seen me on the podcast, it's because I love my mom.
All right, good deal. We solved everything. By the time we leave this, we're in the conference room. We're going to come out, and all of America will be fixed, which is terrific.
Can we do Quick Slants Arm and Arm tonight?
Oh, yeah, Quick Slants Arm and Arm. In addition, if you enjoy this podcast, you'll be able to hear a couple white guys on another podcast. It's the Expats Podcast promo.
Another one of those white offensive linemen.
But you can get Copen and Giardi.
Yeah, they break down every game after the game, X's and O's like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, so it's the Fox News of podcasts. You can listen to those guys. Also, the Best of BST podcast. It pops up every single morning. You have myself, Michael Hawley, Casey Smith, and Tom Giles.
I've been on there before.
On BST.
Yeah. Gerard Mayo has too, probably.
I've never been on BST.
Yeah, you have.
They do it without your knowledge. Live.
So 20-minute bite-sized episodes in which we get on to the topics of the day. Condensed versions. You can listen to it in the morning on your way to work, or you can listen to it on the bus, on the subway. You can listen to it while you jog. You can listen to it while you walk over for a coffee on break around 10 o'clock. You can listen to it at lunchtime. You can listen to it during your 2 o'clock. You get the idea.
But no, but that's it. Squash. Those are the only situations.
Right.
All the ones Tom just listed.
And, otherwise, of course, you can listen to this podcast that you're listening to now. Okay, back in a second. Hey, we're back at it again. Now time for the football. First things first. Stunned by the clock management at the end of the game by the Houston Texans and clock management around the league in general. I don't know why I launched with that first point.
Yeah, sort of a funny one, but, man, not a good job by Bill O'Brien. He admitted it to his credit after the game, right? He said, that's on me.
That doesn't make it better.
Should it be on
him?
Yes. Definitely. He's the head coach.
But
that's your
if
deal.
You stand there and you tell
he
your
needs
offense.
An Ernie, he needs an Ernie Adams in his ear.
If you tell your offense or you tell your quarterback, look, if you complete it in the middle field, we need a timeout right away, and then he doesn't call the timeout, is that head coach then falsely falling on his sword later when he says, yeah, that's on me, that's my fault, when he really believes that the guy should have called the frigging timeout?
I think the point is he probably shouldn't believe that because the buck stops with you, right?
That's a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's only so much you can do. If I say, Phil, go out there and make sure
you're the head coach.
Well, yeah, the buck is going to stop with me at some point, but you're going to have some reticence. You're going to not be able to take the full blame. To me, the way he said it insinuated that somebody other than him screwed up.
So that's not
which I don't love.
Sword,
which I don't love. I think that
that's like falling on a butter knife.
If which is even worse.
It's even worse.
Right.
That's a slow death.
Or a spoon. Yeah.
Falling on a spoon would hurt.
I wonder if, because he is the offensive play caller, if that gets in the way. See that happen every once in a while with a head coach who's got play calling duties, and you can't keep track of the clock. You can't keep track of everything going on at once. But
multitasking.
Listen, that's part of the gig. Unless you got an Ernie Adams.
You know, multitasking is. I mean, that's been. You know, it's not real.
You can't do it.
You can't multitask.
Nobody can multitask.
You cannot multitask. It's impossible. Look it up.
Because you're really just focused
really
on
just
one thing at a time.
On one thing at a time.
Yeah. Okay, but you can rapid fire focus on multiple things. Like I can spend 20 seconds on this and then the next 20 just as focused on the next thing. Or are you saying that's an
Yeah, but it's hard.
Because I can't.
To Phil's point, it's hard. He needs someone that can – he probably has someone like that.
I would assume so.
Yeah.
Patriots lose – excuse me, win. Mm-hmm. Win 36-33.
Mm-hmm.
Tight game.
But we got a lot to converse about with what happened in the game. Third and one problems.
Yeah. At the end of the game, they only had a couple of third and ones offensively. One of them.
Short yardage in general.
Short yardage in general was a big issue week one, right, against the Chiefs. They had issues. So it came up late in this game. In the fourth quarter, they had a third and one. They hand off to Mike Gillisley. Blown up. No good. Comes around, I believe, one drive later, maybe two drives later in the fourth quarter. Third and one. Belichick or Josh McDaniels, whoever it is, says, screw it. We're throwing it. They throw to Rob Gronkowski. Incomplete. They have to punt. They were down for both conversions. Both conversions were key because they were losing. So what do you do? What's
the
deal?
We talked about the first week.
Later in the season, quarterback sneak when you need a few inches. I'm telling you, it's too early now to do a quarterback sneak.
Why?
Because of the injury risk?
Yeah, because you're not putting Tom out there like that, you know, quarterback sneaks. But I'm telling you, how many times have we seen Tom quarterback sneak?
Yeah, but he's done it in the early season before he did it against Cincinnati.
Yeah, he wasn't 40 years old.
He actually did one.
He didn't look like he was 40 years old.
I think he might have done. He might have already done one this year.
He didn't look like he was 40 years old.
You're not trying to get your quarterback.
Yep.
I mean, quarterback sneaks, they don't feel good.
Is it the running back? Is it the offensive line?
I think it's more the offensive line. Right, because sometimes these running backs are getting killed before they even have a chance. And this is the thing. When everyone in the stadium – and Bill will say this, right? When everyone knows that you're going to run the ball, defense knows, the fans in the stadium know, offense, you know you're running. You know where you're running behind your best run guys. You have to be able to pick up a yard. And that's how you win playoff games. And we're not
– Absolutely.
This team today in September – I mean, this isn't real football. It's like, who can play the best of the worst football? No, honestly. It's like, who can play the best, especially with all of this, the distractions, right? You know, because the anthem thing is – and it's for a great cause, but it is a distraction. The lack of padded practices leads to sloppy football. It just does, right? You know, all these things kind of play into, like, the early season woes. And then you look, I'm going to defense now. Not having a Hightower in there. Not having a proven communicator like David Harris in there. I don't even think he's played, right?
Phil?
He had, I think, four snaps.
But who's communicating? Like, who's the person who was, like, at that second level? Because the thing about it, one, two, three, one being the defensive line, two being the linebackers, three. Like, you want the chief communicator – on level two.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, you just don't have that.
Kyle Van Noy, Landon Roberts have been kind of the main guys in that. But, you know, the back end has not played well either. The safeties, Deron, Dev, Patrick, have not played great on the back end. Are you concerned about them? Should they be at all focused?
Don't think the safeties were quite as bad as some people – the safeties in particular are quite as bad as some people made it out to be – the other day, there was one touchdown that Dev was, I know, involved. Or there were two, actually. So one was he was one-on-one coverage at the tight end. Great throw by Deshaun Watson. Back shoulder throw to Ryan Griffin, who's 6'7", 260 pounds or whatever. He was there in coverage. It was just a great throw, great catch. Tip your cap. The other, where people maybe alluded to the fact that Devin was late getting to the football, I thought it was another really good play by Watson, because what happened was Devin was in the middle of the field. He looked to his left, where DeAndre Hopkins was one-on-one with, I think it was Malcolm Butler. Devin starts to shade that way. Watson comes right back down the seam, to Bruce Ellington, who had beaten Jonathan Jones. Devin got there. It was late, but I think when you're in his position, again, you want to be in the right spot at the right time all the time, but you give the quarterback some credit there too. I was really, really impressed by Deshaun Watson, what he did.
What was your view on those two touchdowns?
Yeah, my view, first, you know, I think you hit it right. I think you hit it on the head, Phil. But
Thank
to
you.
Be able to, like, and I know quarterbacks have progressions, right?
Mm-hmm.
But pass coverage, it's easy to isolate a specific group, the safeties, the corner, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, there are 11 guys. The pass rush has to tie in with the back end, right? On running, you know, to stop the run, which they're not doing a great job stopping the run as well. I think they're, you know, like 26 or something like that. The defensive backs have to come play in, you know, with support and things like that.
Because there's so much stuff going on
exactly.
at the linebacker level with crossers and guys in the flat.
Exactly. So every – I mean, this is a 11-man problem, mm-hmm. right? This is 11 guys have to fix this. So
when you come to play a quarterback who can scramble the way Watson can, the way Cam Newton can, this will be an issue coming up again this week. It's like,
I don't think so, though.
You don't think so?
Watson is this.
He's just next level. He's already
yeah. rookie
he's
guy.
Already,
Cam Newton has been blasted. He's from the top.
He's still like a new puppy.
Exactly.
Up there.
Exactly. He's a new puppy. The owners to Rivera to everyone on that
stay
team.
Stay in the pocket.
Said,
stay in the
Cam,
pocket. Stay in
listen,
the pocket.
Do not take off running. This is September.
Mm-hmm.
You save that running for late in the season.
It really because, damages well, it's, him, too.
It's
him,
yeah. such
him
an
in
issue.
The pocket, he
he's
is so much less effective because he's not he is not a standstill. Put your base down and then throw guy.
Well, I would think, again, yeah, that would play into the Patriots' hands. Like, I think they would rather have Cam Newton in the pocket. They would have rather had Deshaun Watson in the pocket.
His football
and Watson
seemed
missed,
to sail.
Watson missed some throws from the pocket. He made some really good ones,
yeah.
but he missed some throws from the pocket, too. But when you're playing a scrambling quarterback like that, Drew, what do you do? Because every week it's been something different, right?
Yeah.
Like, week one, it was the formations and it was the motion.
Right.
Week two, it was the pick plays. That they couldn't get right led to big plays. Now week three, it's basically scramble drill. Like Deshaun Watson had 5 passes that went for 20 yards or more. 3 came on plays where it was backyard football.
Yeah.
What do you do defensively to try to just cover your asses in those situations?
Well, you have to. Well, first you have to have a fast rat, right? I think sometimes they were trying to have rats who were like bigger guys who couldn't catch people. And then you look at the first game with Kansas City.
What's the rat?
The rat's the guy who's like 5 yards off the ball. He can hit those crossers coming, but at the same time have his eyes on the quarterback. What happens is when you're in man-to-man defense, your back is turned to the quarterback. So everyone's running down the field, and now the pass rushers are running up the field. You always hear Bill say, don't rush past the quarterback, right? But then it kind of takes away from the defensive ends getting to the quarterback. But then you look at Kansas City. They did the 3-man rush. And they had the rats looking at out, but then they had forever because even when you had that 3-man rush, the 3 guys were just like sitting there patty caking around at the line of scrimmage mm-hmm. and weren't really hitting their best moves. Those guys are supposed to hit their best move, and that nose is going to cover both sides. And when I say cover, if this guy makes an inside move because it's there, he'll wrap around for contain. So,
you guys keep rolling. I have to leave the podcast for a moment. And I will come and retrieve you if I need to.
We have a television show in a few minutes.
I know. But that, he was just
I
getting
do,
into his
He
good
was getting into
O's.
It. I do want to ask you one thing.
That's so what happens when you get older. You have to use the bathroom.
Shut up.
We're just continuing on that same topic about the scramble drill and maybe the rat factor as well.
Or zone.
So what it looked like to me, just watching the game back this morning, Patriots defense versus Texans offense, it looked like for a span of time, they had Devin McCourty at the second level watching the quarterback.
Yep.
Is that something that you have to do? Do you have to basically just sacrifice one guy in coverage and say, you got the quarterback, make sure you limit all those scrambles?
Yep, definitely. But the thing about Devin, he was playing pretty high, though. He wasn't like a rat.
He wasn't like true linebacker level all the time. Sometimes he was.
He was like a robber, though.
Yeah,
because he was
okay.
still trying to rob the over routes and things like that. He
okay.
wasn't trying to hit crossers.
Yep.
And crossers, you know, are shallower.
Yep.
He was trying to rob those overs and at the same time keep his eyes on the quarterback. But you can also limit.
But that's like the kind of athlete you need to be able to follow that
sure.
quarterback around.
Or this guy named Gerard Mayo. He used to be pretty good. But this is the thing.
Woo!
I want to make sure I hit on this, though.
Mm-hmm.
You can, like a guy like Cam Newton, expect to see more zone, right? You don't want him, obviously, you hope that he doesn't run around. But this guy, his footballs tend to sail. Like, if mm-hmm. he's just sitting in – because he has a huge arm. Like, this guy can – he can make all the throws. But when he misses, he
High.
Misses. And then with zone defense will give you eyes on the quarterback if he does decide to run. And not saying get out of coverage. But now in zone defense, it turns into man defense as soon as guys start to run around.
Rod's gone. Just Phil and I now.
So we got a couple things that we wanted to hit on that we haven't hit on yet.
You got your report card out.
Before we wrap it up, I do have the report card out.
So instead of asking you to go through the entire report card, what I'd like to know is just a few different positions.
Mm-hmm.
First one being secondary and cornerback. What were some of your grades back there?
So for the secondary, I just do the secondary as a group. Makes less work for me. So I just I went with the gentleman C for the secondary. I thought that the safety play, which we talked about with McCourty already, was not outstanding, but they got beat on some good plays, some tip-your-cap kind of plays by Deshaun Watson.
I don't feel as strongly about that as you do.
So here's the thing where they broke down was the scramble drills.
I thought Dev was there was too much space between him and Griffin on that touchdown. I don't
the back shoulder throw?
Yeah. There's too much space.
So we're going to disagree there because
it was back shoulder, but it was also.
It's not much you can do there. You're fighting through him. He's got you sealed off, basically. But that's okay. We can disagree on that. I thought that, where they got gashed was on those scramble drill plays, which are really hard to cover for 5 and 6 seconds at a time. And Bill Belichick said it today on a conference call. Listen, I thought on the straight drop back pass plays, we were pretty competitive. And I agree with him. Where I had a few issues were with some of the penalties. You had Stephon Gilmore pick up a couple costly ones that led to eventual field goals.
First one was really stupid. Second one was not as bad.
I
understood why the flag flew.
I think I'm with you there. Yeah, it wasn't like so egregious because he was – when Gilmore made his dive at Hopkins' legs, on the field.
Yep.
But by the time he hit him, he was a foot and a half out of bounds.
His strike zone had changed, and that's why Watson's like, why are you hitting me in the – excuse me, Hopkins is like, why are you hitting me in the back of the calves?
Yeah.
And it would have been like when I dove, you could have been
if you had turned and run, right.
Yeah.
Different situation. I thought Butler was good. He wasn't really even challenged. He had 2 targets. 10 yards total, no yards after the catch for DeAndre Hopkins. Good physical jams at the line of scrimmage against a bigger receiver. Was impressed early in the game. There was a 3rd down scramble that Watson had. Butler left his guy and stopped, basically cut off Watson, who went out of bounds, short of the sticks,
but it didn't
forced
have to
a field goal.
Say that again?
Butler. So this is
Gilmore PI, the first
one. Gilmore, so going back to Gilmore, I thought Butler was fine. The PI seemed entirely unnecessary to me.
Yeah, I understood Hopkins, or was it?
It was Hopkins that
he was going through him, mm-hmm. So he was in a little bit of a retreat mode. But he also basically put his hands on his shoulders in a half a hug.
Yeah, I think he even gave him a little pull by the collar. Yeah, it was just not a smart play. There was a miscommunication at one point where. There was a very easy 3rd down conversion to Ryan Griffin again. Man, Ryan Griffin looked like Robert Gronkowski at points in this game with all the catches mm-hmm. and yards he was racking up. Very clear miscommunication where he really didn't cover anyone, and there was some discussion back and forth between him and Jonathan Jones as to who should have been there to make the play. A couple catches where he's on Hopkins, and it looked like they were playing zone, so maybe it was cover 3, and he just wanted to make sure he was getting deeper than the deepest. But a lot of space to DeAndre Hopkins, some pretty big and easy gains on a couple of those plays. I just feel like Gilmore is still getting adjusted to what's happening in New England here because it looks to me at times like he's lost. I think that's pretty obvious. There are other times, and this is what I'm going to be watching moving forward. A, does the communication get better? B, does he become the kind of corner that the Patriots have had over the course of the last few years, which is – physical, not afraid to play in the run game, and more of a an edge force player. Malcolm Butler has been that at times, even though he's small. Logan Ryan, you've discussed this in the past, really good tackler. I'm not saying Gilmore's a bad tackler, and I'm not saying he is disinterested, but it has looked to me through 3 weeks here that there are times where there are running backs coming at him and he has an opportunity to make a play, and he's not exactly sticking his nose in there.
Yeah, and I think that's going to show up on film, and I think it's going to show up for Josh Boyer and Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia, and it's going to show up for the other cornerbacks too, and that's where the rubber hits the road with what level of pride and urgency does he feel to try and make his game look like the other players' games looks. And that's the interesting thing about signing a $65 million guy, whereas you could have gotten off the hook for $20 million worth of Logan Ryan, right?
Something like that, yeah. I don't remember his numbers off the top of my head, but you're right. I mean, it's almost like the you know, the old stereotype of the cornerback, the Deion Sanders stereotype. Like, I'm making business decisions on a regular basis here. I'm worth a lot of money, and so I'm not looking to tackle 225-pound guys.
And it's funny because that is a mindset that sometimes serves you well. Would Julian Edelman be in a better spot right now if he didn't try and, you know, play at the level that he does all the time, including preseason games? You know, Gilmore, I think, when you look at what he's done, the other day after he had the penalty, the first one, he then followed that up with two plays of, you know, pretty impressive pursuit. He went on a cross, him and McCourty, and, you know, they both went after him like a couple of friggin' rabid Wolverines. And then on the next play, I think it was Ellington or Irvin, I can't remember which one it was.
Wrestled him to the ground pretty forcefully.
Just flung him.
Yeah.
And so he's got the ability and he's got the aggression. It's just going to have to be not on his terms, I think.
So those are sort of my thoughts on the secondary. I think the biggest thing, and Gerard said this on Quick Tonight's television show, I think the communication, once it gets better, you'll see some of these issues get cleaned up. What was the other position you wanted to hit on?
Van Noy.
Linebacker?
Van Noy.
And Van Noy specifically. So I don't do
individual. Then.
They were a slight tick ahead of the secondary for me. They got a C+. Van Noy made a grave mistake in coverage trying to break up that pass to Deontay Foreman at the end of the game, near the end of the game there. Gave up a 34-yard catch and run. Just bad. Really wasn't close to it. Didn't have any help other than Daron Harmon, who was, you know, the last resort to make the tackle there. But he did, I want to give him credit for this, he made a key play at the very end of the game. That third and one stop that Bill Belichick couldn't stop talking about after the game was made possible because Van Noy, on the play before that, stopped Lamar Miller for a 2-yard gain. So they were loading up against the run, it felt like, at the end there, because the Texans were trying to obviously convert A, but B, run out some clock. And he stepped up when they needed him to in that situation. I thought, you know, just looking at the other prime linebacker in that group was Alandon Roberts. He's pretty clearly become the number two off the ball guy, Tom. David Harris not playing, basically. And the only time Harris did play was when it looked like Roberts' thumb, which he came into the game with, a thumb injury, looked like that thing may have gotten rearranged inside his glove. And he said, I need a couple. And you saw David Harris out there at the end of the game. Roberts was fine. Roberts has played well the last couple of weeks. If he can get it together in terms of what he's doing in coverage, and he really didn't have any bad breakdowns in coverage, but he's just not a coverage guy yet. If they can trust him in that area, I think they'd love to have him out there for, you know, 50, 60 snaps the way they did, basically.
Do you think he's fast enough and instinctive enough to turn, open his hips, and move into the flat?
Yeah, I think he's a pretty good athlete when he knows where he's going. He is very instinctive in the run game, and I think that maybe gets him in trouble in the pass game. Like, some of his down plays in this game were because the Texans were using a lot of play action, and he's so aggressive against the run that when he sees that run fake, he sucks up. Or when he sees a guard pull, but the guard's pulling and staying in pass protection, he sucks up and loses a little bit of integrity in terms of where he's supposed to be in his zone or on his man. But just so he's such a tough guy. He's a smaller linebacker, but you see him just running full speed into some of these guards and blowing up plays. You know, there was one where he did just that. It was their left guard pulled, met him in the hole, pushed him backwards, stopped the run for 2 yards. Later in the game, got absolutely smothered doing the same thing. And I think it was a 3 or 4 yard gain. He wasn't really part of the play because he got pancaked. But the very next play, he's in coverage on Griffin, chases him across the field. Griffin catches it, but Roberts is right there, holds a 2 or 3 yard game, and eventually they have to kick a field goal. So I thought he played pretty well. Van Noy, I think, is still figuring it out at the second level, but he's out there every snap, so
right.
they trust him to a certain extent.
I'd love to talk defensive line, but I'm going to skip over that and go right to the protection issues and the battering that Tom Brady took.
Yeah.
Is that traceable to just a front that has Jadeveon Clowney, J.J. Watt, Bernardrick McKinney, and Whitney Mercilus?
Yeah, that's part of it because there are just so many one-on-one matchups across the board. There's no one guy. Like when the Texans used to come in here and the Patriots were able to basically neutralize that front because it was J.J. Watt, not a ton else. You know, I'm talking 2012, 2013. When were some of those playoff games? Anyway, you could double or triple Watt and everybody else was fine in their one-on-one matchups. You just can't do that anymore because the other matchups are Whitney Mercilus on LaAdrian Waddle or Jadeveon Clowney on Joe Tooney. And those are really difficult matchups to win. So, yes, I think that's a huge part of it. This will be probably the best front that the Patriots offensive line faces all year. That said, plenty of room for improvement in terms of creating some yardage in the run game. Pro Football Focus had a good stat that Patriots running backs were only given 1.2 yards per carry before contact, which is a stat that usually is associated with offensive line play. It means you're not creating a whole lot of space for those guys to get going.
Mm-hmm.
So
run fits.
They got to figure that out. They've got to figure that out in terms of the run game because right now guys are getting overpowered, which is a little bit of a concern. It's an athletic group, but without Marcus Cannon and with Nate Solder playing the way he's been playing, it feels like they're just really kind of light up front.
Yeah, you know, Joe Tooney's, they look like a finesse-y, touchy
type
of team.
Tooney's getting pushed back with relative ease. You know, Andrews is a smaller guy. Shaq Mason's a very good run blocker. And Shaq Mason, honestly, by the end of the year, we may be saying he's their best offensive lineman. But the Solder thing is concerning because he has not been very good.
Mm-hmm.
Run game, pass game. You know, you expect him to maybe hold up a little bit better. Again, tough matchups, but he
tough
gave up
matchups,
a sack
too. A lot of time missed in the preseason.
Yes, a lot of time missed. Dealt with that injury. And so he may still be sort of getting his feet underneath him. But Mercilus got him pretty good with the old double swat. I'm swatting right now.
Yeah,
just
you can
so,
see it.
Just so precise. The pass rushers aren't just like athletic specimens. They know what they're doing. It's really fun to watch because Solder, you could see him punch with two hands. And Mercilus waiting for it. You see two guys basically like trying to body up to each other. They're almost like just chest to chest, like waiting for the first guy to make a move. And as soon as Solder shoots his hands, Mercilus pushes him aside. Solder's off balance. He runs right around him. Another sack he gave up was Clowney doing the old Trey Flowers bull snatch, which is the
smash in, then rip.
Smash in, and then you get him leaning forward, and then you grab his chest plate and you rip him to the ground. So they're really good. LaAdrian Waddle, you know, didn't lose the game for him,
mm-hmm.
you know, like which is.
Yeah, no, I mean,
know,
you didn't know
so
what you
he
were going to get over
some
there.
Credit. Yeah, he really does. And we talked about it maybe on this podcast or it could have been somewhere else. We talk a lot. we weren't sure who was going to start there. Was it going to be Waddle? Was it going to be Fleming? And one of the things I said was, you know, if this is a game where they really feel like they can run it or they want to run it because they're afraid of that pass rush, I think it would have been Fleming in there because he's the better run blocker. But if they're going to be chucking it, it's probably Waddle because he's a little longer. He's a little maybe lighter on his feet. And that's what you got. They threw it all around the lot, but Brady got smoked. They just can't sustain what happened. You know, 41% of Brady's dropbacks, he was pressured,
mm-hmm.
I think. You can't.
It's insane.
You can't keep doing that. But again, not every team is the Texans. So.
No. Hey, is Mike Giardi doing a quick blow-by?
God, he looks good.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Looks like a Mater D.
He's good.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to distract you.
No, that's okay.
Are you coming to grab the cans?
No,
you need the cans?
Oh,
there they go. Yeah, he does need them. He grabbed them.
You should listen to the most recent segment here on Early Edition. Uh-oh. Have some fun with the Draper / Brady stuff. Be good for you.
Interesting. I don't know what that means, Draper / Brady stuff. Does Draper hate Tom Brady?
I have no idea.
He was asking for him to do more when it comes to the social activism stuff a couple weeks ago. So, anything else you want to touch on? Report card? The offensive line grade, I believe, was a C-. I had him at a D. I had him at a D, and maybe they deserve the D. I just I feel like most of my Ds and Fs are reserved for losses. Honestly, like you got to give them some credit, right, for that final drive. Like that,
you know.
Brady did get smoked on a couple of those throws, but they held up just long enough in order for the Patriots to win the game. So it was sort of like as bad as you can get in a winning performance, if that makes any sense.
It makes sense.
Anything else you want to touch
on?
No,
I think
let's get out of here.
I think we've given people a lot of artillery on a lot of different fronts, and hopefully things will settle down, and we'll have a more cogent and football oriented. And interesting podcast for you next week, or maybe later in the week. We'll see. Still priming for that Thursday one.
Well, and before we let them go, be sure to keep listening
to the
Expats podcast with Giardi, who just checked in and said something that made no sense to me or probably you.
No.
And Dan Copen as well on that Expats podcast. And be sure to keep checking in on the Celtics Talk podcast, Tom. The Celtics have really started firing things up here. I believe you got Mike Gorman and Tommy Heinsohn on the most recent Celtics Talk podcast. That was sent out on the old Twitter on Tuesday afternoon. All kinds of stuff happening with the Seas, obviously. So for all your updates there, listen to those guys and keep listening to us.
All right. Thank you very much. See you later in the week. Bye.